Hi, I'm Lydia Bastianich, and you're listening to Food Fridays on The Leonard Lopate Show.
The weather is getting warmer, which means people are barbecuing, grilling, and enjoying the outdoors again. So we've invited James Beard Award winners Karen Page and Andrew Dornenberg back to our show to discuss their latest book, What to Drink with What You Eat. And since we've been talking about dinner parties on today's show, we thought we'd pick their brains about pairings for those more elaborate meals as well. For this new book, they have consulted with dozens of renowned chefs and sommeliers from across the country in order to find out what they call the peak experience in pairing the perfect drink with a meal would be. It's published by Bullfinch, and I'm very pleased that it brings Andrew Dornenberg and Karen Page back to our show. Hello.
Hello. Great to be back.
When it comes to a food and drink pairing, what does peak experience mean?
I guess that's up to everybody's individual definition. You know, you think back to the days of the 1970s, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. We don't really do that anymore, or at least not we do the rock and roll part. But I think that the sex and drugs euphoria of the 1970s has been replaced in this decade by food. I mean, we're a celebrity, chef is celebrity obsessed culture. We love food. We love wine. And when you get those best pairings together, they are absolutely explosive and magical.
So celibacy and eating now, is that it? Forget about whether a wine is a red or a white for the moment, but should price be a consideration when you're choosing a wine to go with a certain food? I mean, we're not likely to drink a very expensive wine with a burger or a hot dog.
Although some do. I think we had, was it the Crypt Dogs? We went to a wine tasting.
Yes, we had Crypt Dogs with, it was someone who was selling off their cellar, and so we were drinking aged Burgundies. I mean, and like some of the great aged Burgundies of my life with Crypt Dogs. And his whole thing was, you know, don't overthink it sometimes. Although, and I will say, my big shock was we had Krispy Kreme donuts with Sauterne. And it was just a little weird. I mean, I can't remember what the Sauterne
was. Over the top. No, yeah. Chateau de Cam.
Chateau de Cam, that's right.
Exactly. And not just any Sauterne, the Sauterne. But, so, you know, I think a lot of times people will argue to us, oh, you know, wine's too expensive. That's why I have beer or I have something else with my meal. And I think there are so many wonderful wines, especially right now. We're at a point in time where there is a wine glut, if you want to call it that.
Yes.
But just so many wonderful wines being made that it's driving prices down. The availability is there. There's never been a better time to drink wine and to really enjoy wine.
Well, Eric Asimov of the New York Times said on the show recently that, in his opinion, $20 is the sweet spot for affordable but really good. That seems a bit high.
Yeah, I think you could easily go much lower. Actually, we have some wines today we'll talk about in a little while. And the highest cost is one is $14. And so I think it's very easy to find wine south of 15 that, you know, it's not special occasion. I'm not going to order, you know, open it for my birthday, but certainly on a Tuesday night if I'm having a casual dinner, you know, I don't need to spend 20.
If I were opening a wine shop, I've thought about this, not that I'm likely to do it, I would say all wines $15 and under, and then have a little wall, a little place that says for those special occasions where I would have more expensive ones. And I think that that would really be appreciated by most shoppers.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think that was the genius of Josh Weston when he opened up Best Sellers on the Upper East Side, that first location, and just anything in the store is under $15. You could go in and walk in and not be intimidated because you knew you could, you know, you knew what the price was. Maybe you couldn't afford $15, but for people who did walk through those doors, you could find amazing things that were fresh, that were juicy, that were fizzy, you know, as his different categories made clear, that you could really just find a whole host of things to drink. And then he was also a pioneer in terms of suggesting what to pair with those different
wines. And then
wines.
He sold his shop to A&P. And I don't know what he's doing these days.
He's eating out at the Modern. We ran into him the other night.
Okay, so yes. For most of us, we're not going to have great aged Burgundies. Do you have any thoughts about what wines pair best with summer foods like barbecue, burgers, ribs, etc.?
Absolutely. So we were giving this a lot of thought, and we came up with the three R's of summer. This is all you need to remember: Riesling, Rosé, and the Rhone. And these are all places where you can get inexpensive wines that are just fantastic. And these three wines will pretty much get you through almost everything. Each of the wines will do fish, vegetables, meat, And so very simple, the three R's, Riesling, Rosé, and Rhone.
But when you say Riesling to people, they immediately think sweet wines. You're talking about dry Rieslings.
Yes, dry off dry.
Exactly. Although, you know, there are off dry versions that go beautifully. If you're into curries, like we love Ethiopian food, we love Thai curries, and we'll bring along, or Indian curries for that matter, we'll bring along a bottle of off dry Riesling, like a Spätlese, to go with that. And
what they're called, Halbtrunken in German?
They have a slightly different approach. But I think the whole idea behind Riesling is I think people are starting to understand, thanks to the efforts that everybody in Riesling's been making, that it's not just those sweet wines. It's not the Blue Nun of the 1970s. It's really, you know, the whole host of them. We brought one with us, which is a Helfrich Riesling 2012. This is, I think, one of the best value Rieslings out there for under $15. And Helfrich, you can get it in the New York, New Jersey area. It's not one of those national brands. They make it in smaller quantities. Smaller distribution at this point in time, but it's really up and coming. We've never been disappointed with the quality at this price point, so definitely one to keep an eye out for. But there's also other name, you know, Trimbach has been a name in Riesling forever, and they still make a really wonderful Riesling. Lucien Albrecht, a great Riesling.
The Alsatian ones. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's Willem, that's very inexpensive.
Willem's great, and then there's also even upstate New York. But,
drink local. Yeah. Go to Dr. Constantin Frank, who really put Riesling on the map in the United States. Prove you can make Riesling
here.
He
was a guest on our show 25 years ago.
Is that right? Wow. And happy anniversary again, by the way.
Well, you mentioned rosés.
Yes.
Rosés mean so many different things. There are so many different styles of rosés. Mm-hmm. But what do you say to people who say you don't drink rosé except in the summertime?
Oh, we drink it year-round.
They don't know me.
Yeah. They definitely don't know my husband. When we go out to
I went into a wine
dinner.
Shop, and he said, we don't carry that in the winter.
They don't carry rosés in the wintertime?
Wow. And it's so funny, because there's a difference in style-wise in rosés, where at the beginning of summer, if you want a lighter rosé, you drink French, and if you want a bigger rosé, you go to Italy. But there's also great rosés being made with Pinot Noir out in California. But I really do, the one we brought in today is Grand Toque, and this is from the Rhone also.
The Marinon is the winery, and it's from the southeastern region of the Rhone.
And what I love about rosé is it is crazy, crazy versatile. I actually thought of it as a surf and turf, and I was looking up in one of our books, and rosé goes from everything with smoked salmon to prosciutto to lamb. I mean, you're sort of hard-pressed not to find something that's not going to work with rosé. And also, I think what's great about rosé, it's not you don't sit there and contemplate rosé. You just pretty much have it in the glass, and you start thinking about where's the next bottle, unless you're, you know, drinking like a great, you know, champagne or a sparkling wine. But it's meant to be enjoyed.
When you say something goes well with something else, should it complement it or provide a contrast?
Either or. There are two basic strategies, which are to compare or contrast. When you do the comparison, there you'll find certain notes in the wine or certain characteristics of the wine that will echo what's going on the plate. So, for example, with sweet desserts, the rule of thumb is that you always want to have a dessert wine that's at least a little bit sweeter, sometimes a lot sweeter than the dessert that you're serving, because otherwise the dessert will blow out the wine. And with other dishes, obviously you don't want to pair saltiness, so that's where you want a contrast. You might have saltiness on a plate, you know, a salty French fries or something, and that's where sort of the greasy saltiness is beautifully balanced by a bubbly wine. You know, if you've got, you might not want to do fine champagne, but if you're having a Krispy Kreme and a Chateau de Cam, maybe that person would.
I mean, if someone's going to pour it for you, try it. Take it.
But otherwise, you know, in Italy, they're always drinking cold Prosecco with, like, the greasy pizza, and that'll work with French fries, too.
I would just pass on the Krispy Kreme and stick to the Cam. But my guests are Andrew Dornenberg, Karen Page, the award-winning authors of a number of books on food and wine, their latest What to Drink with What You Eat. And how many people did you consult on pairings for this book?
Gosh, dozens. We've interviewed some of the we've been really blessed and lucky to speak with some of the best sommeliers all across the country for both What to Drink with What You Eat and our more recent book, The Food Lover's Guide to Wine. We've really been blessed from everybody to from Belinda Chang, who won the James Beard Award last year as best sommelier when she was still at the Modern in New York City, to, you know, Larry Stone, who's considered the king of the modern sommeliers.
And how much range was there? Did these experts contradict each other?
Sometimes, absolutely. Yes. We had someone who told us that he loved Gewürztraminer with tomatoes, and then we had another sommelier vehemently, you know, decry that combination, and then that wouldn't work.
There's also the spirits people. I think a lot of, like, some people are very into scotch, and I don't always understand all those pairings, and it's just not necessarily my beverage at dinner time, you know. But that's the only other time I sort of say that's creative, you know.
Well, people used to say Gewürztraminer with Chinese food, but I never liked it with Chinese food.
There you go.
I like Rieslings or Sauvignon Blancs with mm-hmm. Chinese food, but.
Yeah,
so this is a matter of how your palate also works?
Sure. No, it's all very individual. And the best we can do, which is what we try to do in all of our books, is to provide general rules of thumb and saying, based on the palates of these dozens and dozens of experts, this is what they're saying is a great match. This is what they're saying is a very good match. This is what they're saying might work if this is the only thing you've got on your wine rack. But we'll get you in the ballpark and try to give you the sense of, you know, what the characteristics of the wine are that will work with a particular dish or vice versa.
Now, we've talked about chilled whites and rosés. Should we also chill some reds?
Absolutely.
Because isn't the rule of thumb usually white wines cold, mm-hmm. reds at room temperature?
Yeah, a good rule of thumb is if you have a white wine, take it out of your refrigerator for 15 minutes before you're going to have it. Because your refrigerator is great for chilling milk and lettuce and a lot of other things, but not necessarily white wine. So pull your white wine out.
And some people say that we drink our white wines too cold.
Absolutely.
What does it do? It undermines the flavor?
Yeah, the wine will just sort of be tight and won't let all the flavors come out. And so I'll literally cup my wine sometimes in my hand. And another rule for reds, and this is actually sort of funny, a saying on our house, have you put the red wine in the refrigerator yet? Put like a good 15-minute chill on your red wine, especially if it's 80 degrees out. You want to chill that down a little bit.
And I think the exceptions to the temperature rule, by the way, are sparkling wines and sweet wines, which you do want to serve very cold, 45 to 50 degrees, which, you know, your refrigerator or your freezer can help them get to that temperature.
But you're more likely to chill a light red wine than
a
big Barolo.
Like a Beaujolais, as opposed to a big more tannic wine or more full-bodied wine. You want to serve that closer to 60 or 65 degrees.
Mm-hmm. Now, you don't just talk about wines in this book. What other beverages do you explore? Beer, obviously.
Beer,
are there beer pairings?
Beer, absolutely. Because, you know, there's always a general rule, and I'm big on rules of thumb because it's so hard to remember the specific pairings, given there's dozens and dozens of different kinds of beer, for example. But if you've got a lager, a pilsner, or a wheat beer, something in the lighter end of the spectrum, those are going to go with lighter dishes, whether we're talking about salads or seafood, that kind of thing. And if you've got a brown ale, a porter, a stout, one of the bigger styles of heavier wines or louder in flavor, as we like to call them, those are the ones that can really stand up to beef, lamb, game, other mm-hmm.
And you
meats.
Talk in terms of these drinks in music terms, loud, soft.
Well, you know, it's so hard with flavor to really find that vocabulary. And we go to the world of music more than probably anything else. I mean, we've turned to, you know, architecture. We've turned to art. We've turned over the course of 9 books. We've used a lot of analogies. But we do keep coming back to music because I think the analogies are so close. You've got the issue of notes, of tempo. The music sort of brings it all together. And they've found this wonderful visual representation of notes to really suggest something that you otherwise, you know, even the deaf can look at the notes and understand the music. And I think our hope is that we'll evolve to that place in food where you can really understand what a dish tastes like or what a menu is like, even if you can't literally taste it.
Now, you also include bottled waters. Do bottled waters change all that much?
Yes. Actually, I've become a total water nerd. You know how, you know, there's tea people and wine people? Yes. So say you're going to have a pizza, a big pepperoni pizza with a lot of cheese. Well, then you want a big bubbly water like a Pellegrino, because really what you want to do is refresh that palate and sort of, you know, take away the spice and the fat from all that cheese, which is beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. But if you're having something like sushi, you want a very quiet water like a Fiji. You don't want, you know, think about sushi, it's very soft flavors. And, you know, I really don't think of wasabi and, you know, a lot of, you know, bubbles going together that well. So, yes. So, again, thing along the musical spectrum, if it's a quiet food, have a quiet water. And, you know, the louder it gets, you know, pepperoni pizza, cheeseburger, yeah, get a big bottle.
Of course, a lot of people have beer with their sushi.
Yes, and champagne as well.
And should you have Japanese beer with sushi? I mean, there's that whole business about if it grows together, it goes together. Do you
Absolutely.
Live by that?
French
food
with
French
wine? It's a great place to start. We don't live by it, but I think it gets you in the right ballpark.
I don't know what Chilean food tastes like, so could I not drink Chilean wines?
Well, if you like a lot of red meat, on our first trip to South America, we were told that the typical serving of red meat was about 16 ounces per person.
Wow.
It's like you need
per
a
meal.
Lot of red wine
per
to
meal.
Wash that down. Per meal, yeah. Not per day, per meal.
But most of my life I've heard that you should pair red wines with cheeses, and now people are telling me that was wrong. You should be having white wines with cheeses. What are you thinking about that?
We're seeing a lot more white wine with cheese courses. I think over the last 5 to 10 years, where they're, you know, a dry tannic wine doesn't necessarily go with a big blue cheese. They again, that's where there's two loud things fighting each other. So you want something a little quiet, a little sweeter. I love a Gewürztraminer with cheese, you know, or just a lighter sweet white wine. Also, at the end of the meal, so I really don't want something big and heavy now. I want light cheese, light wine.
And I think Parmesan is one of those cheeses that you could have with almost any kind of wine. It's such a wine-friendly cheese. So if you want to serve a cheese course, you're not sure what cheese will go with the wine that you're serving, Parmesan's always a good way to turn.
Now, this book isn't only about pairing beverages. You include recipes?
You know, from time to time, we'll throw in some recipes. But, you know, I think in this day and age, people are really going more toward being more freestyle in the kitchen. And I think that's where our book, The Flavor Bible, really comes into play of wanting to just suggest, you know, here are some flavors that go together.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, you can tell we've got a little theme going here of what we love. And it's really, you know, understanding the principles, what works together. You don't really need a recipe, per se. You can use a little bit more ingenuity in the kitchen and just work with compatible flavors and make something on your own.
I actually called Karen from the Green Market the other day because the ramps were in, and I only knew how to cook ramps with the eggs. I'm like, well, what else can I do with ramps? So I called her up, and she opened up the book and said, ramps go boom, 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 and gave me like 20 things.
Well, that book, The Flavor Bible, was selected as one of the top 100 cookbooks of the last 25 years, and you didn't even have specific recipes. You were talking more about
exactly
what things go
not
well.
A single recipe in there, so thank you, Cooking Late Magazine, for including us in that.
Now, just one more thing before you go. How important is glassware when you're trying to create the peak experience?
You know, I think if you can, if you want to make an investment in your wine enjoyment, investing in glassware is a good way to go. We happen to use, really pricey glasses,
yes.
But I think, and it sort of took my breath away to spend $65 on a Zalto glass. But we have these glasses; we've had them for years.
They don't break.
They don't break. They're even dishwasher safe. And you know, Austrian glass making has evolved to the point where these are just spectacular glasses, and they really do bring more enjoyment to every sip.
As opposed to drinking it in a plastic cup?
Or even Flintstones,
a small
jelly jar.
No, we'll go to a BYOB restaurant where you bring your own wine, and we'll actually bring glassware now because they're just going to give us this tiny little thick, you know, cup that doesn't really do anything. So we bring our own glassware along with our wine.
Now, why does the glassware have an effect on the taste of the wine?
Well, you know, I think sometimes when we've gone to and, you know, again, you don't say anything to people, as we learned on your previous segment entertaining. You really don't want to say anything to your host, but if you bring a wonderful bottle of wine, or if they're serving a wonderful bottle of wine in glasses that have a thick rim, or they're opaque so you can't see the color of the wine, the body of the wine, you're missing out on half the experience. If you can't even smell the wine because the way the wine is, you know, it's not shaped in a way that really preserves the bouquet, it's a disappointment.
Do you always swish around the wine after it's been poured?
Well, I think it helps to, volatile the esters, as they say.
And actually, I think a good glass will also show off a very reasonable wine. Like we were drinking, you know, this $12 rosé last night in a good glass. It's a big difference.
Andrew Donenberg and Karen Page, their latest book, What to Drink with What You Eat. They are the winners of a number of awards, including the Georges Deboeuf Wine Book of the Year Award. This book, published by Bullfinch, it's got lots of pictures as well. I always like
beautiful
pictures.
Photography.
Thank you both so much for being with us again.
Thank you so much for having us, Leonard.